ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Cricket Podcast time with your boys, Corb Middlemass and Ed Cowan for your Monday. India are champions of the world again at the T20 World Cup. We have one round left in the Sheffield Shield. We're down to three teams in contention for the title. And speaking of titles, the One Day Cup is coming up this Wednesday, the final at Belgrave Oval. Plus, Women's Series comes to a close. Curtain comes down on Elisa Healy's career. We've got a whole lot to chop up. My name's Corbin Middlemass. Ed Cowan is in Sydney. Hello, Teddy.
Corby.
Here
Big
we are.
Big Monday pod.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, world champions, India.
Mm.
First, who would have thought it?
First team ever to go back-to-back, which you weren't big on that stat leading into the tournament. But, hey,
and
it's...
first host country to ever win it.
First host you country to ever win.
Well, didn't you?
And the first three-time champions that we've ever seen. So they've now won the T20 World Cup more than any other team. They were obviously coming off a high after posting 253 in the final. They beat the second-best team in the tournament, England, there. And then took on New Zealand in the final. And what an interesting game we saw last night. A 96-run win. So 96-run win in front of 100,000 at the Modi Stadium in Ahmedabad. Abhishek Sharma, Sanju Samson got him off to a great start. The openers put on 92 in the power play alone. And Sanju Samson, when this tournament was on the line, boy, did he bring his best cricket. So 97 not in the Super 8s in that must-win game against the Windies. 89 in the semi, 89 in the final. He was named player of the tournament. Ishan Kishan scored a neat little half-century. 255 India posted, so it actually beat their semi-final score of 253. And then New Zealand in reply, they lost Finn Allen early. Lost Ravindra to the first ball that Bumrah bowled. Bumrah finished with 4 for 15. He struck twice in the 16th over in consecutive balls, picked up another one in his 18th. And really, apart from a half century for Tim Seifert, they never got going. The Black Caps, in the end, they were all out for 159 with an over to go. So all out in the 19th over. Big win for India at the World Cup.
This is what you call a real fizzer.
Mm.
Or fuzzer, as it's known across the Dutch.
Yes.
But in terms of, you know, the script playing out, it was almost to a T, wasn't it? You know, New Zealand push hard throughout the tournament. The underdog scrapped their way to another final in a World Cup or Champions Trophy and then can't get over the line. I mean, realistically, this game was done after six overs. I mean, 90 in the power play. Everything's against you at that point in time. You just can't wrestle back momentum for the rest of the game as much as you try. And so, you know, they tried to take the pace off the ball consistently and it kept being taken over the fence. So the Indian T20 cricket is only accelerating. You know, they have the strongest T20 league in the world. You know, their younger players are exposed to the pressure of the IPL, which is probably now far greater than most international T20 games. They have this talent funnel and pipeline for this format of the game like no other nation. And so it's kind of hard to see how other countries are going to compete with them, really. And that's a bit of a bear case, but these World Cups roll around every 2 years, and you'd be hard-pressed to suggest India, even though it's in Australia, aren't going to start favourites for that one as well.
Yep. Well, I think that's a pretty good breakdown. When you think about they've got the best T20 batsman in the world in Abhishek Sharma, he didn't have a great tournament. So he was off. Suryakumar Yadav gets a golden duck in the final. Wasn't really a huge factor throughout. And in the end, Sanju Samson was great when he needed to be. Jasprit Bumrah is phenomenal. I mean, it's nothing that hasn't been said before, but you know, whatever format of the game it is, he's a cut above the rest, and we saw that obviously on display again, you know, key moments in this tournament.
Yeah, and we talked about it before the tournament started, but what they have been able to do is identify key white ball players. And so a lot of these names aren't household names to a lot of the Australian audience, aside from if you follow the IPL or the T20 team.
Yeah.
The modern way is ingrained into them, and they walk out to bat and they try and hit six from the first ball. They've got change-ups. They bowl, you know, it's great spin, you know, T20 spin. And realistically, they could probably field three teams, and those three teams would all make, you know, close to the semifinals. There is so much depth in this format of the game coming out of India. And, you know, it's very hard to compete with because their up-and-coming players, as I said, are exposed to this and ours are, you know, muddling along.
I mean, they did lose in the group stage, didn't they? South Africa got them. They had to really pull it out. Yeah, yeah, they had to pull it out against the West Indies, and England probably pushed them more than most teams. I think it's clear to say that England were the second best team though, Teddy, in the tournament. Given they beat New Zealand in the final by 96 runs, and they beat England by only 7 runs. So does that prove that, given the fact that England won the head to head,
no,
even though they didn't get as far, they were the better team?
No, you still owe me dinner. Unlucky, Corb. I'm going long on vegetable curry.
Look, the other thing about the Kiwis, so fifth white ball final in 11 years, nothing to show for it. Not a single trophy in the cabinet. So this is their role. They're the other team in your favourite sports movie. They're just there to play the broader role of the opposition. So never won a T20 World Cup, never won a 50-over World Cup. Really, the only major global tournament they've ever won was the World Test Championship, obviously.
They won a Champions Trophy way back when, didn't they?
Sure. Great. Cool. But it's unfortunately for New Zealand, they didn't really give too much last night, and they're a long way second in the end, as 96 runs will prove. I don't know what else there's left to say about that game. I mean, hats off to India, the best team in the world, undoubtedly, when it comes to T20 cricket.
Would you change the World Cup format at all? You know, upon reflection, expanded 20 teams. They kind of mix and match every couple of years.
I'd go 16, top two in the group qualify, and then we can do Super 8s. I don't have an issue with that. That's very cricket. So Super 8s from that point into semi-finals, into the final. So I'd probably just four teams get a little bit of a haircut, I think. And that still leaves room for some associate nations more, and the qualifiers probably mean a little bit more. I actually thought the last World Cup we had here was excellent. Like, I liked the little pre-tournament that they had where
just about to pitch that. I liked that. The qualifiers at the venues.
Loved it.
Prior to the tournament, and then the big teams turn up. And so that team, you know, like, he had a situation this time. I know it was an aberration, but the qualifiers were 8 months ago for some of these teams. Then they go through their winter cycle, don't play any cricket, and expect it to turn up and reproduce, you know, great cricket against the best teams in the world, as opposed to their hot, they're ready, they're warm, they actually you know, can attack from game one. You know, we had a situation where Scotland hadn't played any cricket. I know, as I said, I know that was an aberration with Bangladesh. But
it's also a great chance to introduce some of those players. So then by the time the tournament starts, you feel like you know them a little bit and a little bit of their story, and here's the guy that started in the group stage or the pre-tournament. And you can do it relatively inexpensive, can't you? Like, you put them all in the same location like they did last time. I think Geelong hosted one set of qualifiers and Hobart had the other. Imagine, you know, if four teams go to Perth or whatever, they knock out their games in a week and off we go.
And so, those teams love it as well.
Yeah.
Educate me a little bit. So, obviously, the next World Cup's in 2028 in Australia. It's also the same year as the Olympics.
Yeah. Australia and New Zealand.
Sorry, and New Zealand.
Yeah, so I think there'll be a squeeze on there, which means some teams will miss out. Some venues will miss out. It's not necessarily as if, you know, everybody's going to get a lick of the ice cream. So, you know, whether it's Brisbane or Adelaide or Perth or Sydney, Melbourne, whatever it turns out to be, Hobart, it's not as if everyone's going to get a go. So you can imagine if Cricket Australia are smart, this is the time that they need to be turning the state governments upside down and shaking them, trying to get as much money as they can for these games.
Adelaide, Melbourne, Sydney. Yeah. Put a line under it.
I'd be going to Perth if I was the organisers. I mean, that's where the money is.
What? Why is that?
Well, their state government's got more money than anyone. So if they want to have games, I'd be saying, hey, you can have a bunch of it, and here it is, and put it at Perth Stadium or whatever. But I know what you're saying in terms of the traditional venues and everything. But as we know, there's probably not as much money in that as there would be if they went to Perth.
From an Olympic qualification point of view, it was this World Cup that obviously impacts that.
So from what I understand, this is for the Olympics, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Olympics is obviously 2028 LA, where cricket is going to be a sport. Six teams in the tournament. Essentially, there's only five because the United States qualify automatically. But basically, it would be the top-ranked teams from five regions: Africa, the Americas, Asia, Europe, and Oceania, plus a final global qualifier is what it says at the moment. So I would take it just by the way that that reads that the United States would count as the Americas team, even though they're technically the hosts, and then so anyone else in the Americas has to be a global qualifier to earn a spot. Now, so it does say as part of this that a set cutoff date expected to be post the 2026 T20 World Cup, which is obviously the one we've just had. So I'm not sure that that mark has actually been set as yet. So I think that'll be communicated to teams going forward. And then basically from that point on, we'll get down to however many teams we are and who's on top in a particular region. Obviously, the thing that's a concern for us is that the rankings were last updated on March 4. Australia didn't make it out of the group, and New Zealand went all the way to the final, and we were ranked 3, and the Kiwis were ranked 4. So I think there's a fair chance to expect, Teddy, that that there's every chance that Australia could be skipped in the Oceania category, which means we'd have to look for an at-large bid to try and make it through to the Olympic Games.
So that would mean we're there's one global qualifier, and we would have to pitch for that, basically. Might see some of the big boys play a bit more bilateral T20 cricket, I reckon.
Yeah, I was going to say all of a sudden
no one wants to miss the Olympics.
These random bilateral games are going to mean a whole lot more than what they once did.
Let's keep a watch on that.
I was about to say I'll try and find out a bit more about that as the week progresses, because as we know with but the other thing is too, as we know with the ICC, is these things are fluid for a reason. It's almost like sometimes they like the fact that things can change hurriedly at the last minute and so on and so forth. Some other news coming out of the World Cup: Brendan McCullum, as reported by The Guardian, reporting that McCullum retains the full support of the board. He's set to remain England's coach across all formats. As we know from various codes, ordinarily that doesn't bode well. But he's the first.
Was that the line?
That's the line in inverted commas.
He's done.
He was, of course, first England coach to win a test down under since 2011, but it was far from an ideal tour. He also made the semi-final of the World Cup and got within 7 runs of the eventual champions. And this is probably the big kicker. He is under contract until next year's ODI World Cup in Africa, which is the 50-over World Cup, and that's not played till late in the year. So we're looking at sort of November, December 2027 for the 50-over World Cup.
I mean, you get a sense that he'll see out that contract. So obviously there's an Ashes in that period as well. So next, July, August, and then into the World Cup in Africa, they put on a good show. So I think if they had an Australian-like tournament, it could have been the end of him. You don't get that sense.
And just on the West Indies too, I noticed they've been stuck in India for a period of time trying to make their way home. I think you went to the Caribbean, yeah? You played there before? I think for everyone can vouch for, how people in cricket can vouch for how difficult it can be to get there at the best of times, let alone in the middle of
the hardest place to get to in the world, full stop.
And it feels like every cricketer's got a story of, the bags didn't turn up or something got left there, or, we travelled in 3 different convoys, and you can imagine this team just sitting in a hotel in India and they're frustrated by the fact they've been stranded for 6 days since being eliminated and very little communication from the ICC. So you can imagine as the ICC is trying to put out spot fires all over the place and make sure this tournament reaches its conclusion, and then someone's constantly ringing saying, hey, by the way, how are we getting these guys back to the Caribbean? And someone would be sitting there thinking, oh, no, like this, that's the last thing we thought of, is trying to get, 7 flights booked to different corners. And so I feel for the West Indies guys, but Darren Sammy, I saw a headline on one of the articles that just said, I just want to go home, and with Sammy's photo and a quote of him. So that must suck for those guys. I feel for them, and particularly given everything that's going on in the world as to why you'd want to be back home safely as soon as possible.
The other side of the coin is there's bigger issues going on in the world, and being stuck in India is probably not the worst thing that could be happening. But to give context, I think the last time I was in the West Indies, we flew home from Barbados to London to Dubai to Sydney. So we went there via LA, Miami, Barbados, somewhere else, I think. But we went the other way around the world because it was faster, between connecting flights. It's 30 hours to get there from Australia.
Which, again, proves that it's couldn't be further away. Like, it's probably, it's as close going one way as it is the other way. Like, it's amazing. All right. Everything else is going on in cricket. So, first of all, the Aussie women bowled out India for 149 in the second innings. They needed just 25 to win the match. And the two youngsters, Georgia Vole and Phoebe Litchfield, were able to get Australia home. Elisa Healy, as a result, didn't get the chance to bat. I know all the conversation was, you know, whether she would be pushed up the order and a chance to bat in her last innings. She gave a quote afterwards basically saying that didn't need to be the moment today. It gave us a glimpse into the future to see that pair come out and open the batting. She also mentioned, look, sitting in the change rooms afterwards was the first moment she had where she felt a bit of sadness, just looking around thinking, this is the bit I'm going to miss. And so you hear so many sports people say that it's not so much the discipline as much as it is the camaraderie and being in that group and having those moments as a team. And she said that was the moment that sort of struck her. And apart from thinking about playing a WNCL fixture next week for New South Wales against Queensland, which is the final on Saturday, she said she hasn't given a whole lot of thought as to what comes next and what it looks like. But what a champion, and nice to go out on top.
Absolute champion. One of Australia's great cricketers. Great way to go out. You know, and very heelso, you know, in her true understated manner to say, well, today's not about me, you go get the runs and I'll go clap you from the pavilion. So took a great catch at slip. I mean, that team, I know they play more test cricket than any other team, but in that format, the longer the format, the more their skills come out.
Mm.
And, you know, we talk about T20, the compression of time brings anyone and everyone into the game. You see the quality of their techniques, their temperaments, their finesse, their skill come out in test cricket and more so in 50 over cricket, and I think they'll probably or should start favourites for the 50 over World Cup. And it was a great test match. Annabelle Sutherland, 300s in three tests, and as you beautifully put on offsiders yesterday, geez, you're on fire on the TV court sidebar. But those 300s have come basically in 3 years with 12 months gap between each 100. It's not as though you get on a roll in a series like the men can and you get in form. So each individual test match is played as singular tests, and yet she's managed to score three in a row and big, you know, monster hundreds, 200, 160 in a match-winning 100 here. So goes to the conversation, I don't know why she's not the captain of the team. Maybe you have a better idea. You know, an all-rounder, sure, it's hard. But I think, you know, when you've got a situation where your captain sometimes, you know, struggles with injury, might not be in the best team, I just fear that they've picked the wrong horse there.
Yep. As you know, at the time I wasn't so sure about it, and the fact that she's broken down in the first series back, having not, and really, unsurprisingly, when you've played such limited cricket, like it's hard to roll back out there and play at the top level and everything else and, you know, roll out in a short series where games are back-to-back-to-back and be able to physically get through it. They go to the Caribbean at the end of the month, so there's 6 white ball games to be played there, so not sure about Sophie's availability there. But, it's hard to have a national captain that's not available. I mean, that's, you know, best ability is availability, and unfortunately she's so rarely there. So Australia win that. They lost the T20 series to India, 2-1, and then 3-0, as you said, in the ODIs and 1 in the test match, so in the lone test. So the longer the formats, the better the Aussies went. David got in touch with me through Instagram, which, as we know, we love. You're a LinkedIn guy, I'm an Instagram guy. People seem to get in touch with us that way. But all part of our ABC Cricket family and community and listening along and sending their feedback in. David's got one for you. Says, love the pod, a totally fresh take on the game, and we love you and Teddy. Hoping a technical question for Teddy, if that's okay. I went to the women's test match at the Wacker and have been watching Phoebe Litchfield for a while, a great talent, but has anyone else noticed how unsteady she is at the crease? Way too much movement prior to the ball arriving. Might be okay in the short form, but is exposing her game in the long form. What do you make of that from David?
Yeah, interesting. I might need to go back and... Oh, well, I'll give a quick take, but I might go back and watch some footage because I feel pretty well placed to talk about left-hand opening batters. I mean, I'm a huge Phoebe Litchfield fan. I think her game suits all formats of the game. Incredible talent. So I think what David's referring to is, you know, her prelim movements, which, you know, sometimes can maybe get a little bit too late and sometimes get a little bit too big. But that everyone suffers from that. Anyone that isn't standing perfectly still can sometimes, and even Steve Smith, you know, over the years has suffered from that. If they're out of sync or exaggerated, you obviously can be late on the ball, you know, your balance of your eyes and your head. And that's probably the one thing that I would look for when looking at her batting is the level of her eyes. Because occasionally I do think her eye level falls to the offside a little bit. And it forces her, which is a strength, to play probably fractionally squarer than she would like. And so while she loves hitting the ball backward a point and just in front of the point with that clean bat swing she's got, if she was slightly more upright, you'd start seeing the ball going wide and mid off. And I think in the first innings, we probably saw a good indication of this, a wide ball slightly over and she kind of scoops it a little bit to point. Maybe not a scoop, but, you know, off the middle of the bat, but not over the ball as much as she would have liked. So maybe that's a little thing that she could work on, trying to hit the ball, you know, a little bit straighter and a little bit later. But I'm not so concerned about the movement, so to speak. I mean, I watched her a little bit. It didn't stand out as something that should be on the top of her priority list.
Mm. Okay.
Does that make sense?
No, it does. It's a great breakdown, and I appreciate the question from David. Just on Elise Perry too, so she's really the last of the three greats that are still there, with obviously Lanning and Healy retiring, but she, another milestone for her. So in women's test matches, went past Karen Rolton as the all-time leading run scorer. I was thinking more about this too, and, you know, as I sort of mentioned about the context when it comes to Annabelle Sutherland's hundreds and everything else, kind of makes it more impressive for Perry too, doesn't it, that in terms of, you know, previous generations, Perry's probably played less test cricket. Like, we're only playing less and less of the format in the women's game than ever. So this isn't like on all formats, you know, leading run scorer. She scored more test runs than anyone else when you think women in other generations of the game, although, you know, that there were various other things holding back women's cricket in those days that, you know, aren't the same. There's not those hurdles there in the same way for Perry. But given she only gets to do it essentially once, sometimes twice a year, that's a really cool record and a piece of history to own.
Yeah, and talks to both her skill and longevity in the game. I mean, you're right, there's less opportunity to score runs, but in many ways there's more opportunity for, you know, the females to excel. So it is a balance. Maybe she'll get an oval named after her as the leading test run scorer of all time for Australia.
Nothing can be worse than Cricket Central. So
see what I did? I think you say in the media game, I teed that up for you.
Cricket Central needs a new name. So I tell you what, you could do a lot worse than slapping at least Perry's name on it and maybe pick some other great cricketer, and you could name it after multiple players as opposed to just one.
I think the only problem with that is she did spend quite a bit of her career in the last, well, sorry, not quite a bit, recent years playing for Victoria.
Ah.
So whether or not that excludes her. So maybe it's...
Maybe Albury Wodonga.
Cummins.
Maybe there might be a venue on the Albury Wodonga on the border or
there
something.
There we go. We can rename the ground in Albury Wodonga.
All right, that's the women's game done for now. As I said, WNCL final on the weekend. Pitts, New South Wales up against Queensland. All right, domestic cricket, the men's competition, we love this. So Sheffield Shield and One Day Cup. Might just start with the One Day Cup, given the fact that I am in the presence of somebody who's won a title for both New South Wales and Tasmania, and it just so happens that they're playing each other at the Belgrave Oval on Wednesday. Adam Zampa, Ben Dorschus, both expected to be available for the Blues. And for the Tigers, perhaps Nathan Ellis will roll around on Wednesday. What do you make of a Wednesday final in, what are we, the second week in March?
I mean, it's not ideal, is it? There'll be two people and a dog there. Maybe they'll give the Belgrave public school kids some free entry. So not ideal, but, you know, understandable given the scheduling issue with the women's ODI. But you'd love to see that on a Sunday. And my memories of, you know, one day domestic finals were, while sometimes the game, even while the Big Bash was on, while the round games weren't that well supported, finals were always very well supported. And so, you know, the last final I played at North Sydney Oval was, you know, a full house. The MCG, you know, Tassie beat Victoria, what was it, 10-11? There would have been 10 or 15,000 people there. There's going to be 500 people there. And so you would have loved to see that on a Sunday afternoon. It's going to be a good game of cricket, I think.
Who wins?
Probably the best one-day wicket in the country. So as long as the weather holds, maybe we should fly down, Corb.
It'd be nice. Yeah.
Game of golf.
Yep.
Bit of cricket.
Sure. So Wednesday is, I'm just trying to, as I'm scrolling through, looking for a start time to all that. Here it is, the 11th. Starts at 2 o'clock, so it's a proper day nighter, which is nice to see. So perfect Wednesday night viewing. I've got Wednesday off. Park up and take in the whole thing. So.
Absolutely park up. Yeah, they'll go full production mode. I think you know the broadcaster that you occasionally work for are covering the game, so it'll be a good production.
Beautiful. Looking forward to it. All right, the Sheffield Shield, which I know is closest to your heart, Teddy, so we're down to three. Three teams left in the running. There's also three games left in the regular season, two of them of consequence. We'll get to that in just a moment. But the reason we're there, gee, Queensland, they've got their climate to thank, don't they? The heavy rain saved Queensland big time, chasing 267. They were 6 for 44. Six for 44, chasing 267. Only 4.4 overs available on the last day, and they lost a further two wickets in that time in less than five overs. And yet, somehow, the rain saved them. That was all she wrote. And in the end, they get out with a draw when WA looks certain to cause a big boil over. So, well done for the Queensland weather pattern to keep their team still in the Sheffield Shield.
But it wouldn't have impacted them too greatly because WA last. And so they wouldn't have got extra points for the draw as opposed to South Australia. So,
and they wouldn't have lost points, I guess, would they, for losing?
No, it's not as if. That's my point.
Yeah.
They win the next game they're in, depending on.
So they might, know, they might as well have,
in South Australia.
May as well have lost, should have gone out there and kicked them over. It's all for nothing.
All gone to the pub. I mean, the oddity being here that you know South Australia are peaking at the right end of the summer, Queensland look like they're fading. And you look through that attack that Queensland put out, and it doesn't really. If you're a top six batsman in any conditions, you wouldn't be trembling in your pads, wondering where my next run's coming from. Where you look at that South Australian lineup, and you think, oh, this is a good attack, and fast bowlers win Sheffield Shields, and the two best attacks without doubt are Victoria and South Australia. So my expectation is those two play in the final, but you never know. You do never know. And it might be one of those days where kind of save the momentum from, you know, a loss and then they get some momentum back, win, South Australia lose and they go on and win the Shield and they pinpoint that day. So the disappointing thing looking back around, we said at the time, was, you know, both Tasmania and New South Wales were in the hunt at that point. You know, Tassie clawed their way back into a game and New South Wales basically shut up shop 20 overs to play, three wickets down, needing a run a ball. And sure enough, a week later, the campaign's over and they'll probably finish fourth at best. Mm. And so you know, it just makes no sense to me why they wouldn't have attacked that game. And wouldn't have mattered if they lost, a draw and a loss is effectively the same outcome when you're chasing points.
South Australia and New South Wales. So 9 wickets was the margin here. South Australia winning comfortably in the end after Travis Head blasted 58 of 46 balls. We had 100 earlier in the game for Jason Sanger. Wickets here for Nathan McAndrew again, so 6 for 55. Interestingly, your man Xavier Doherty sort of flagged this a few weeks ago, basically saying, hey, he would have been, his name would have come up in conversations with the Australian selectors and everything else. And I sort of was a little bit taken aback at the time. And since then, he's just continued to take more and more wickets and kind of makes you think, well, why wouldn't he be in the role that he's been playing? Henry Thornton also got a maiden fifer against his old state. And there was a little funny moment, too. I don't know if you saw this on the socials, where Liam Scott crunched a boundary, which went through the fence. And then Charlie Stobo went running out after it and then realised it was one of those like security fences, which is about sort of 6 feet tall. And he's trying to look through it. He's trying to go around it. He's trying to pull it apart.
He tried to reach through
Trying to reach through it, laid down on the ground. And then just great sort of comical scenes. Went and found the biggest stick that he could, which everyone's experienced at some stage, trying to fetch something underneath the car or behind the shed or whatever it turns out to be. And has to flick the ball back in a professional game of cricket to his mate who'd come and given him a hand. So that was a nice sort of fun scene to see at Karen Rolton Oval.
Ingenuity. It reminded me a little bit of played a season in Holland. Just a quick anecdote. Played a season in Holland, and you know a lot of the canals kind of a side-by-side at the cricket grounds. And often, you know, a big six would go in the canal and you'd get the pool scooper out and get the ball and give it a shot. But occasionally go into the paddock on the other side and there was a little rowboat. And you'd get in the rowboat and you'd go across the canal.
That's awesome.
Go get the cricket ball, row yourself back, throw it back and play on with the game.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. What about, I mean, as you touched on the other day, great to see Travis Head opening, got some runs here. He's not going to play the next game. He's off to the IPL, as is Josh Inglis. But a few former New South Welshmen there amongst the action, so with Sanger and Thornton.
And McAndrew.
And McAndrew.
Yeah. And Scott.
Throw his name in there as well.
And yeah. Hunt. So there's five of them.
Yep. That's New South Wales second 11. There's
well, no.
Going
no,
strong.
They're not. They're the defending premiers.
Probably raises the question, how come they're playing for South Australia and not for New South Wales?
Your question, not mine.
Well, surely that's one you've got to answer, isn't it? Jeez. Victoria and Tasmania, 70-run margin in the end in that game. So the Vics winning. Sammy Huppert continues his summer, so 93, opening the batting and wicket-keeping, which is phenomenal in red ball cricket. Equal leading run scorer in the competition. I've written here equal leading wicket taker in the competition, so I don't know when I prepared these notes. Mitch Perry, 5 for 45, triggered a collapse of 6 for 36. So in the end, Tassie, that was in the first innings when Tassie were all out for 91. And when you're all out for 91, Teddy, in the first innings of a game, makes it pretty tough to try and win from that position.
Basically, makes it impossible to win unless the other team only got 100, which they didn't.
Anything else out of that game?
No.
No. All right. Let's look ahead. So round 10. So no Head, no Inglis. They're off to the IPL. Cam Green comes back, though. He's going to play as a specialist batter for Western Australia against New South Wales out at Homebush, which is Cricket Central, as they call it in New South Wales. Xavier Bartlett's available. He's going to play in that Queensland game up against Tasmania in Hobart. So the equation here, Queensland must win and hope South Australia loses to jump into second spot. And then there is a game at Junction Oval in Melbourne, which may very well be the prelude to the final itself. Victoria and South Australia at Junction Oval. South Australia win or involved in a high-scoring draw, and they will more than likely make their way through to the final. So that's the setup as it is at the moment. It'll either be South Australia or Queensland to play the Vics in the decider.
Where does your coin fall here?
I'm probably on South Australia, I think. To be honest, to get there from here, I think Tassie will beat Queensland down there.
Interesting. I guess the only thing on my mind is the Tassie game will definitely be a result.
Mm.
And there's a world where Victoria think, hey, why don't we just rest a couple of players and produce a pancake and have a bit of a bat off?
Yep.
You know, we're in the final, we're going to host it, and all our fast bowlers can have a rest.
Yep, I think that's
and
the
so
most
that
likely scenario.
Then comes into some kind of quirky mathematical equation that I'm not so comfortable with.
Yep, no, 100%. I'm with you there. So you're on the Redbacks as well?
I'm still on the Redbacks, but I've just got my eyes open.
Yep, no, I flipped a bit on the back of last week. I think last week I said Queensland, and I feel like Queensland will make a better final for whatever it's worth. But hopefully for Victoria's sake too. Like, hopefully they don't produce like an absolute road. Like, I get that they're incentivised to and everything else, and they've tried to put these points in and everything else. But I mean, they're better off. They've got a powerful team. Just play the way they've been playing all year.
Couldn't agree with you more. Yeah. And the worst thing they can do, you know, to halt momentum is to go and play a different style of cricket or on a different type of wicket or. You're playing great cricket, just keep playing great cricket. And we had this conversation last year about South Australia, who had played on, you know, bowler-friendly wickets, and they produced the same wicket for a final and backed themselves to play on that with their fast bowlers and score more runs, which they did. So I'm all for that, for sure.
Final round of the Shield, by the way, Teddy, begins on Saturday. So Saturday through to Tuesday. What a better way. Yeah, I know the footy codes are up and going and everything else, but... if you need Cricket Central or the Junction Oval or the Bellary Bowl, we can get out there and watch some cricket. Still cricket season?
Still cricket. I mean, not that you could tell from how much time you've been spending researching for this podcast.
Please. I'm all over it today.
Look at those notes.
When it all cuts together, you'll be amazed how sharp it sounds. All right. Thank you, Teddy. I appreciate your time as always. If you've got any more feedback for Teddy, feel free to send it through, particularly in the next couple of weeks. Because now that the T20 World Cup is over, obviously we won't see a national team for a fair bit of time. And the IPL doesn't even begin until like the 28th or something. So we've basically got 20 days where there's not a whole lot happening globally with the world's best players, which is rare in the modern calendar. That's sort of worth keeping in mind. So apart from Sheffield Shield, a bit of domestic cricket, that's about it. It feels like Friday's episode, Teddy. We're just going to do a 40-minute debrief of the one-day final. That might be what we got to talk about come Friday.
No, reminder, Corbin, we're back to Mondays only.
Right. Okay, back to
you
Mondays
didn't know
only.
That.
No, I didn't.
Schedule.
I got Friday
don't
off.
The WhatsApp group, do you?
Beautiful. Don't worry about it then. We'll chat on Monday, and by then we'll have 2 days of Sheffield Shield to fall apart. That's enough. That's enough. I'm out of here. I'll speak to you next week.
Bye.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.